This is the February 23 at the house of Ernie Light on Beechwood Boulevard, taped for the National Council of Jewish Women by Howard Braun and Bess Corellis. Say your name, Ernie.
My name is Ernie Light.
Ernie Light, you've told us about the travel territory of your business. We'd like to hear, one, how the business got established and precisely what the business was and its physical setting of the businesses around it, of the retail district where you worked.
Now, actually, it was not a retail district. It was so-called a wholesale district. Yeah. In 1950, my brother and actually three of us bought out a business, and it was called from a gentleman by the name Everbeck. He retired, and we started out on a small scale in the wholesale business. The business started on at 1109 Fifth Avenue.
And wholesale what?
Wholesale clothing. That is mostly work clothing, underwear, then jackets, pants, basically non-real dressy stuff, no suits or anything like that. Sport shirts, hosiery, even belts. Some later on we took in a lot of other things. At that time when we came in there, that place was actually about two blocks, or more than two blocks, nothing else but rows, store after store, wholesale businesses in every line, from ladies to children to shoes, menswear, even a very nice store was there, one of them, a clothing store, wholesale clothing. This was some unique in that respect that most of the business was done on the road, but some of the business was done locally, right there in the stores. But basically the biggest business day was Sunday. Most of these wholesale places were open only 6 days. On Saturday they were closed, and Sunday was the big day. All the merchants from the surrounding towns used to come in and to purchase, to buy stuff there, and usually they used to carry that stuff with them back in their cars. The upper part, towards Oakland, there were one block, and there was mostly, there were bakeries. There was Mayflower Bakery, I remember. There were about two or three kosher butchers up. Most of these merchants at that time, they were all Jewish, and they used to come and purchase their meat and all their needs, what they couldn't get in the smaller towns, and they used to carry with them back too. It was almost, I look at back, it sounds unbelievable that you could hardly cross the street on a Saturday, on a Sunday. And of course, there were some people who were coming from others, right from the city, surrounding places. They were usually coming to buy retail, so they said they come here because you can get better prices there. That was before shopping centers, before there were discount operations or anything of that. And that...
What were the best years?
The best years in that place were probably from 19... until the redevelopment came. What was that? I don't know, it was in the 60s, I think so. And that changed already because part of the avenue was torn down, and that already a lot of people, those older people went out, and some of them sold their places, but it was never the same. But still remained a viable community there. There was a shul close by on Washington Street. It was called Bet HaMedrash HaGadol. And what's in back? Kaplan was a big man there in that shul.
And Beck Kaplan.
Yeah. They had no rabbi. They had a so-called shamus, but very knowledgeable, a very fine gentleman by name Mr. Rob.
Rob.
Yes, right. And he was an unusual man. He was a survivor who his family perished during the Holocaust. One daughter survived, he and his daughter returned. He came, I don't know where his place was, anyhow, he remarried, and he had another family after that, a boy and a girl, but his daughter, and I mean, he settled. I was living in Pittsburgh after that, and with the redevelopment, the shoe was torn down too, and they went and they rebuilt a new shoe. The new shoe, not far away from the same place, but that was already much more modern. But the interesting part of the shoe is it's still, with all modernity or everything like that, all the furniture and all the pews and everything is remained, taken out from the old build and put in. And that's what makes it so interesting. I mean, it's a worthwhile, it's something worthwhile for anybody to see that shoe.
Especially
and
the arc.
The arc, everything. I mean, a lot of it, the windows and everything. And then they built an apartment for him too, and he lived there with his family. He kept the shoe going because he really was the person who was a caring person. He made sure in the morning and somebody, he was the first one to open up the shoe. He used to come in early in the morning, and if anybody came in, any stranger came in, he right away approached them. He says, do you have yard side, or can I help you in some way, or what, why? And he kept that shoe. He had minions every morning, every night, plus all the holidays. And I think most of the people had high regard for him because he was an unusual man. Despite all that what he lived through, he was kind, caring, and if there is such a definition of I would call him almost a tzaddik. He was a very righteous person. I remember a case for him. One day, it was a Thursday, and a Thursday is usually Mondays and Thursdays, the Torah is being, I mean, you read the Torah, and a lady walked into the shul, and the lady was distraught, and he went over to her, what is it? She said she would like somebody in the family, is very sick, and she would like to make a meshabera. And he said, that's all right. When we were finished with the laning, he went and he called her up there, right in the front of the Torah, and he made a Meshaberach, and he told me, he says, how isn't that wonderful that today there are still people left who believe in that, and they come to shul. And again, it was a very touching feel for me, because in a lot of ways, he was very observant, but at the same time, he was a realist. He knew that to survive in a place like that, an isolated place, you have to compromise.
Yeah, getting back.
I'm going back.
What were the businesses?
The businesses were, as I pointed out, in every field they were businesses. Now, it came Monday, every of those businesses sent out their salesmen, and they went and they covered Western Pennsylvania, part of Ohio, part of West Virginia, and they used to go out and try to sell to the smaller stores. In our business, we were three of us. Alex, my oldest brother, was the one who stayed in the business, inside man. Eugene went out, but he went out just in the local area, I mean, close by, but he returned every night. I was the one who traveled the furthest. I had so divided that used to be on 4 weeks basis, every four or five weeks, I used to see my customers. I used to go out one trip, I usually went to from Pittsburgh all the way to almost Altoona, covered that part and up to Barnesboro and all the way back to Evansburg, and usually then I came home. Then another trip I had to go, I used to cover it, was almost all the way to Erie also, and going back I used to go to Meadville and coming back all the way to Zelenopol and back to Pittsburgh after that. A third trip I used to go to West Virginia, there used to be, I started up at Steubenville, then Wheeling, Moundsville, and all around the surrounding, a lot of the surrounding small towns, and that was a return, that was a 2-day trip, the other two were usually a 3-day trips. And then I used to cover the Beaver Valley, and also used to go to here, Washington, County, and Fayette County.
Morgantown?
Morgantown, I didn't go. I went to Waynesburg, as far as Waynesburg. Mm-hmm. This was my basically these are the things. Mm-hmm. And I used to see the customers 8-9 times a year, approximately. And when I arrived there, I usually, they knew when I'm coming because I used to send them a card the previous week that I'm arriving. Then a lot of them, they used to call me up or write me a note to take them along, some of the things that I used to carry. I used to carry samples with me, mostly used to take orders. And you ran into a lot of different kinds of people. In the beginning, there were mostly Jewish stores. Later on, there were more and more older people retired, and some were taken over by non-Jews. There were a lot of so-called company stores. There were the coal companies. They used to have their own stores, and they used to be run by, I know J&L had one, Republic Steel had one. They all had their own stores, and there were these people who worked in the mines. They used to go have to charge everything, and this was the setup of most of these stores. I in the beginning I was a little bit worried that I still have that accent, but I had much more of an accent and I had difficulties sometimes. But after that, I worked up a very wonderful relationship with non-Jewish and Jewish customers. And I used to go into a company store here not far in Washington, from Washington, PA, and the fellow, I think his name was McClellan, yes, and he says, you just go ahead, take inventory, you tell me what I need, you fill in, and that's all it is. And I think, and I have never took advantage of them, mm-hmm. never had any problem with these people. Mm-hmm. And the business started to change after, as I pointed out, the so-called the redevelopment, because there were less stores left, and they were coming in now new and new stores. They were coming in those so-called discount operations, and a lot of people went out of business, but we still kept on going after a while. Actually, we grew and grew up quite a bit from a little business to a bigger business. And we got some better lines. We got Hanes underwear. We had other hosiery lines. And towards the end, not end, but in the 70s, 80s, the popular thing became the fleece wear. And the fleece wear came thing then again. Fleece wear and blue jeans. This was the really the big thing that came. And we were distributors of Bluebell. And so our business grew because we have carried a very big inventory. And I should go back. After the 5 years, on 1109 Fifth Avenue, we moved across the street to 1108 Fifth Avenue. We bought the building after that, and then next to us.
When did you buy the building?
It was in 1956 or something, like 55. Mm-hmm. And then later on, the Peerless, there was next to us a company called Peerless. They used to be hat and cap company. That's all of these old ties, hats and caps. And they went out of business. We bought their building after that. They enlarged, broke through their door, and we took over a lot of new accounts we got, and we started to do more and more business until, let's say, about in the it started, we got started getting older, and a lot of other people started to move out, and then started to go down a little bit. But we still, our business didn't go that much down, but there were less and less customers. We had to look for new sources. We used to do some business with the city, with the county, so-called bits. And of course, if you were the lowest, you got it. And more with universities, like Pitt, Carnegie Mellon, and other ones. And we did a lot of business, so-called printing business. We didn't do ourselves the printing. We used to send out, and we got like Pittsburgh Ballet Theater. We did all supply of their supply. Then we had the Civic Light Opera, their sweatshirts and their free stuff.
Explain what you mean by printing.
Printing is we printed sweatshirts, t-shirts, any jackets, all kinds of things, anything that were they wanted to sell. They just told us what they wanted, me to supply them. Mm-hmm. This was basically our business almost to the last year of our business. And But we realized by the end of the 80s, and right in the beginning of the 90s, that we are too, getting a little bit old for that. It's a tough business. And by 1991, we found somebody who took it over, and that's when we sold it, we've been out of the business. But that time, there were hardly any people left on the same business, but we were there left, maybe four or five, but that doesn't mean, it didn't mean much anymore. It was all, these people more or less did some retail business and a little bit of wholesale business. Wholesale business died for another reason, not because of us, because the less and less stores were left. Because all of these discount operations opened up stores all over in any small communities.
Like and they Kmart.
Started Kmart, and there were so many of other ones in these, all these
people,
yeah, and all of these ones came and they suddenly pushed out all the small town merchants. And the younger ones did not want to follow this thing because thought there's no future, and that's what brought out. The only thing that kept us actually in the last two, three years, it was the printing business that kept us going more than anything else. Plus, we still supplied, as I said, the Haynes kept us going too, because there were still some more merchants that came to us in when they were in a pinch to come to fill in there, not to have to go direct to the factory, because usually it took a long time to get it. This way they could get it right away. It was a good place to replenish your inventory. I would know, this is about basic. And the shoe is still there and it's still going. Of course, the Mr. Rab died. There's a new rabbi now.
What's his name?
Stan Savage. Yes. And they still have minyan every morning and every night and the holidays. And it's interesting that always somebody dies or somebody leaves. There's always somebody else who comes in. There are no big minyanim. They have usually 10, 12, 15 at the morning and same thing in the evening.
But and people from that street?
Not many anymore. There's a small nucleus, maybe two, three people. There are mostly people are there who you started to come and they were saying Kaddish after their parents. And a lot of them remain.
But the wholesale strip?
The strip is almost stripped or completely. There are hardly any. They left a couple of dry goods stores, one of them and something like that. But they're, well, actually, it's not much of wholesale anymore because there is not enough merchants coming in.
In doing this wholesale business, was there any interaction with the Pittsburgh authorities, like the police or the political system? Was there any payoff or other arrangement required?
I don't know. As far as we are concerned, they never had any kind of difficulty. They have no payoffs. They were bids, and you had to make they submit your bids, and if you were lowest, and then you got a bid, and that's all.
So
that
basically,
we stuck to our policy, and we never had to smear anybody or anything like that. There were people who came in, you know, who were officials or something like that. So we used to treat them nice, and that's all. Yeah. Because you never know. And the police was very, 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 always very cordial. And anything we needed, sometimes a favor. I remember we used to get loads of underwear, all kinds of things like that. We used to tie up the street, and they always accommodated. They never made it real difficult. Now they try to help us most of the time. Actually, that was for me a revelation. You know, at first I taught myself for the police, and a lot of these were very, very nice people.
There's a reason I ask that. You've answered.
Yes. What?
Ernie, how were you financed, and what did the other people of the neighborhood do for money?
Well, there, when we went into business, the bank was still Washington Street Bank, and it was actually owned by the Halperns, and somehow they had some faith in us, and they helped us in the beginning, and they lent us money. Of course, we paid it back after that, and that too with the redevelopment after that came down. And across the street used to be the Washington Street, Washington Building. And that building was a very interesting building. That was a building that there were a lot of people who were occupying this building, for a lot of people who were salesmen themselves, for other companies. And they used to have their headquarters there, and they used to have even shows there. People, small towns, used to come and buy it twice a year and do their purchase direct from factory. They were factory representatives. And all of that thing, after the development, all that disappeared after that. There was a building after that, so-called Tanner Building. They still had a few people from that, from the Washington, had offices there for a while, and even these two. Because there were a lot of people coming on the avenue for that reason also. That brought people too, because they were the factory representatives. They had their offices there. Mm-hmm. And the bank tried to help people, I think. A lot of people were helped. Of course, they didn't give you big loans, but every little bit that you needed, usually if they saw that you are working hard and you're progressing and you're doing something, they were always there to help that you needed.
These were not branch banks?
No, these were that time. It was still a small bank, and it was Washington's Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And then after it was sold, and since then the bank has changed already, I think, four times. It was Equa Bank, and now it's National City Bank, and I don't know what else. The same bank in the same place. Of course, it was in a new place. They built a new building after that, and they're the same bank. But the thing is, it's not the same, but they used to be. There's no more. It was a different world completely.
Exactly.
That time, another thing was, it was easier. You were dealing with small manufacturers. A lot of these people, a lot of these small manufacturers were Jewish too. And they too extended credit. They were in New York, a lot of these people. You knew them. If you couldn't pay in 30 days, you paid in 60 days, little by little. Of course, when you went into already later on, there was no such a thing. Big companies don't know anything like that. The day of do is do, and that's all. If you wanted to stay in business, you had to have a very good credit rating. Otherwise, they wouldn't have shipped you.
Your point is not that there was redevelopment that made it the change. It was the economic.
The change in the whole economic system,
in banking and
shopping centers and all these things that completely has changed. Everything changed after that. It's not the same world. It's almost unbelievable. And you look back at it, what it was and what it is today, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you would walk in. I sometimes look at it on the Fifth Avenue. You couldn't park. There was no place to move around. Everything came from people carrying their packages to their cars all over, everything like that. I look back at it and it was something. It's probably people who've been to New York, and I think, what is it called?
Orchard
Street. That was on the same thing in smaller scale. Yes.
Throughout America.
There were very few places like Pittsburgh. Fifth Avenue was known all over Western Pennsylvania, even West Virginia. People used to come for Forest Parkersburg. From everywhere, they used to come into shop to Fifth Avenue. It was a place, people used to bring, especially before Passover, they used to bring their whole families, you know, the people, used to, the Jewish people, and to buy the matzi, to buy everything and take it back. And it was a lot of young kids used to come with their parents, and it was a great thing for them to come to the city to see what's going on from the smaller town. It was fun, you know, it's something that I think who never experienced it has missed something. It really was a wonderful experience to see that and to feel that. This is what the new generations will never understand. They will never know what it was and how things were, and that's all it is. It's an experience that you had to see it and to live it, really, to feel it and to understand it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ernie, we'd like to hear first just a list of the various Jewish and civic organizations of Pittsburgh that you might have been connected with, associated, and any comment that comes to your mind.
No, first of all, when in the beginning, I think the first organization that I joined was the Hebrew Institute, because the Hebrew Institute was a place where my children went after school.
Who was the director?
Director was Abrams, Saul Abrams. And actually, that time
Isidore.
It's Isidore. It was the father yet. Is it? Is it? No.
It was Isidore.
Mr. Abrams. I don't remember. Anyhow, it was Mr. Abrams. That's all I can remember. It was Mr. Abrams. Yeah, but then after that, the son took over. By the time my children were there, it was already Saul was the director already, and they had schools there for after school and Sunday schools, and they had some very good teachers there, and I think my children learned quite a bit at their Hebrew schools that time. They had some advanced classes, and those who went to Hebrew school 3 times a week, they really came out with a lot of knowledge of Jewish history, Jewish customs, and in Jewish religion.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sunday school was mostly, actually my children resented it because it was very much of a repetition, because they weren't going anyhow 3 times a week, and the Sunday school were a lot of these kids who didn't go at all, just on Sunday. And they always said, why should we waste our time there? But it didn't hurt them. They met their other people, and they were actually going even during high school years they were still going to Sunday school, and they went to Sedges after that, and that was one of the organizations where I became, and I was on the board there for quite a few years, and we tried to save it, but in the end it didn't survive like any other institutions. Of course, the influx, or I would say there were more and more so-called day schools were opened up, and they lost their, what would I call
clientele.
It? Clientele, right, and that's all what it was. And the other ones, and then some of the schools had their own Sunday schools.
Mm-hmm.
Next organization that I was, I've been neighbor it, I was a member for a long time, and I'm not too active, I'm a two-spay member, and basically I was a member of the ZOA, that's another organization. And not too active either, but I used to attend meetings, I used to go to some of their affairs. Lately I haven't been as active because there's some split within the organizations, and I have friends on both sides. Not to antagonize anybody, so I'm staying out as much as I can out of it. I am, what else do I have? Each other organization, of course, I contribute to local organizations and all these things. I am WQD, Heart Association, Cancer, and all kinds of these. And it comes organizations. A lot of organizations are there that they're
talk about young people's event.
Now, Young People Synagogue used to meet at the Hebrew Institute. And since my children went to the Hebrew Institute, I went and I joined the Young People Synagogue, and it was a good while back, about 40 years ago, something like that, yes. About 40 years ago, I joined Young People Synagogue was a synagogue. That time they were young people, really, but they were all a lot of very well educated people, a lot of people from Westinghouse, a lot of professional people, and it was a very interesting congregation with no rabbi. All the services were led by members of the congregation. They had their own speakers from the congregation. Everything was run because they had quite a few very, very capable people. And the organization flourished. There was a time that we used to have in the beginning when I started there, for the high holidays, about 400 people. It was the auditorium at the Hebrew Institute used to be packed. If you didn't get your seats in time, you couldn't even get in there. And again,
who were they affiliated with?
They were the Orthodoxy, always with the Orthodoxy.
Were they not affiliated?
They were not affiliated with the Orthodoxy. They were, the services and everything was Orthodox.
But yes. They did not pay affiliation?
No, I don't think so they pay affiliation. But they followed the Orthodox, what's the name?
I just want that.
Okay. And then...
Because they were too chintzy.
Yeah, because they were... No, they're not. They did a lot of things. They used to get money, all the money, there was nothing, was never end of the year, all the money that came in, whether as dues or contributions never was kept for the other year. It was always distributed to charitable organizations. From year to year, it was always the distribution of the money. So they were not, they were putting the money where they thought it's needed. And usually there used to be meetings. There were people who were allocated that, and they had to vote on that before it was given away, the money, where it was given, and how much. Mm-hmm. And once the children started, these same people's children grew up, they went away to universities, to other cities, and little by little some of them died. The congregation started to
dwindle.
Not actually, they didn't dwindle, but obviously there were less and less members.
So
okay.
That's what it means.
Yes, but it's not exactly, they didn't disappear either way, but little, it got smaller. But the organization now, about 4 or 5 years ago, the Hebrew Institute was given over to the yeshiva school. The yeshiva school is now having their girls' yeshiva, and we, your young people's synagogue, moved over across the street to the B'nai Zion. We still are quite, we still have a nice nucleus.